The following is a presentation of Morning Drive Media.
Broadcasting from beautiful Burbank, California, this is the Knapsack Files. I'm Ken Knapsack, and we are just on a roll with interviews. Finally got some interviews back up. It was a staple of the podcast feed, and then you know how hard it is in this town to pull people in for interviews? And then all of a sudden, all my schedules lined up, and I got some wonderful guests. So I hope you guys enjoyed the Van William interview, the great singer-songwriter, rockstar musician. I'm creating a new term. And he's on tour now, so I hope you guys checked out that episode. Some more guests coming here in May, and I am excited. This one was one of those ones where I had trouble scheduling. It was not her fault. It was me. My schedule didn't open up, but finally, she is a former friend. Well, not former friend. Former coworker and current friend and always friend from Screen Junkies behind the scenes, but now she's stepped out into the spotlight. This is Parker Roberts.
Hi.
I'm sorry. You're always going to be my friend, okay?
Thank you.
Sweating
I'm glad already. I made the cut.
Sweating already. And Parker, we are connected forever, Screen Junkies, because I started. And then shortly after you started, and I met you in your first hour, right?
Yes.
You were like in the hallways at the other office.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, you're going to be working with this girl for a while. I was like, hi, I'm nervous and scared. You're like, I'm hanging in there.
Yep. I was like, I've met too many people to register that I even know.
And you had just moved here.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by this town.
Yeah.
A young person adrift in LA, making it work. Where'd you come from and what brought you out here?
Well, I'm originally from Memphis, Tennessee. So I grew up, there and then,
I know that answer. But yeah. I'm just like every time I hear it.
It's crazy. Memphis is, not my favorite place ever. I went to school in Nashville. So I went to school like a music business / music school primarily. And so I thought initially I wanted to do music business, but ended up kind of falling in love with like the TV world and then eventually into YouTube. And I did a semester out here while I was in college and fell in love with LA and knew I wanted to come back. And so I went home for 3 months after graduation and applied for like 300 jobs.
That's how you do it.
And then I actually had a couple interviews and like all in 1 week. And so we kind of pulled the plug and we're like, all right, let's do it. Let's just like up and move. And so me and my dog moved out. And the day I moved into my apartment, I got the call for Defy.
Yeah.
So it was like I kind of like took a leap and ended up working out. So
what you're saying right there. And, you know, I just recently celebrated an older birthday. You're a different generation from me. But what you've just said in the matter of 2 minutes here. You have said some amazing things. Do you even realize the leap of faith that you take?
Sometimes.
Yeah. Is that daunting to stop and go, oh, like I just jumped off that swing and rope bridge, caught the rope, swang to the other side, and I'm safe.
It was crazy. The 3 months after I graduated college were really tough because it was like I didn't realize how hard it would be to get a job. And even though I was like extremely active in school, did a lot of work, like a lot of award shows in Nashville and working in the country music industry, I had a lot of connections, but like my family wasn't in the entertainment industry. Yeah. I didn't do anything. Like I didn't have any connection to LA other than the internships I had done while I was here. So it was like, I have to kick my own ass as hard as possible to get there if I want to. And like, even though my parents were kind of like, it's going to be so far away, like you're moving and you're going to be by yourself because I don't have any family here.
Right.
They're like, if you can do it, if you can save the money and you can move out there, you can do it. And I just knew it was what I wanted and knew it was where I needed to be. And I was like, well, I guess we're going to do this.
We're going to do it.
And then once that, like, I had like 4 interviews in the same week and I was like, all right, I think I can finally like take the chance of going. And then it ended up working out. So
it's
pretty crazy though.
It's not just college kid wants to go take on the world. That's part of it too. And that's hard. Like you said, that's hard.
Yeah.
You get a college, well, no matter what you've studied, no matter what your industry, jobs aren't just there waiting for anybody. They're not waiting for me. They're not waiting for you. You got to go out and get them. But then also, you had gone in to study the music industry.
Mm-hmm.
What were you planning to do? What did you think at one point, this is what I want to do in the music industry?
Yeah, I wasn't 100% sure. Music was kind of my first love. That's how I always describe it as. And, you know, I really like huge Taylor Swift fan, which if
we're going to discuss the Taylor Swift thing,
yeah,
which is a good thing.
Yeah. But she kind of was what, you know, made me fall in love with the music industry. Mm-hmm. And I had always loved Nashville, and I knew that that was where I was headed. And there's so much music there.
It's
so
a great city.
It's a wonderful city. And yeah. I, you know, got there and realized the school that I went to was Beaumont University, and they had a music business program, and then they had an entertainment industries program. And so basically the music business was a business degree, which means I had to take accounting, and I was like, I don't want to take accounting. And so I went the entertainment industry route because it was more like widely focused than just music. Right. But I thought maybe I would end up in something related to award shows and like live events.
Live event producing and everything.
Yeah. And I always knew, like, I did some producing in high school and then, you know, did some stuff throughout college and thought that's where I'd end up. But then kind of fell in love with YouTube and realized you could work in YouTube.
Yeah.
And then was like, oh,
it's viable.
Okay. It's a thing that you can do. So, yeah. So I still love music, but I think YouTube kind of took over.
I connect with what you're saying in the sense of I started going to junior college in Santa Maria, California, studying film production, screenwriting. I want to be George Lucas, right? I love Star Wars. And then I was like, wait a minute. There's so many things in this that aren't related to just sitting on set. I'm out. But when you're going through, and this is, again, the first 2 minutes are fascinating, what you've just described to me. To like even I at my I'm not saying at my age like I'm an advanced age, but just like a career late. I'm in my 40s now, and I had a career change at 38, 39, even though it was one I always was prepared for and wanted. I left a secure job and everything. But it's that point when you know something you're going for isn't doing it for you anymore or isn't at all. Can you take me to that moment where you're like, I had this maybe at one point a vision of what I wanted to do. Produce Taylor Swift's biggest show in the world, right? Great goal. But this isn't stoking any fires for me. Take me to that moment when you're like, I need to change.
Yeah, well, I think it was when I realized that the music industry was so volatile. Sounds terrible to say, but it's a lot of having to fight your way tooth and nail to get what you want, and it's a lot of grunt work, and it's a lot of, you know, you see a lot behind the scenes that you don't necessarily see as a fan that you're like, I don't really think this is what I want to be involved in. And I enjoyed it. But I think what changed for me was realizing just how much I loved YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then once I realized like, oh, I can still love music and I can still participate in this side of the world. But like the YouTube side of things is where I was like, this is new and interesting and different. And because it's all self-made. And I think I was attracted to the fact that it was self-made.
Ooh, what exactly about the set? Just you didn't have to...
There's no barrier.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, there's no, you know, you don't have to have a studio behind you in any way. There's no one up above you telling you what you can and can't do. And I, you know, like my whole life kind of was like a very independent kid and, you know, kind of took care of myself in a lot of ways. So the idea of something that was self-made was like, oh, I can make it into anything I want it to be. Mm. And so when I realized that there were all these people who were building their careers to be exactly what they wanted to be without somebody telling them how to do it, I was like, that's really attractive to me. And so I think that was what the switch was like, oh, I could do some form of what I want to do, but like have it be totally mine.
I'm fascinated by a lot of what you're saying already. It's there's a lot of knowledge in what you're saying there. And also hearing you describe YouTube, which we're basically talking about digital media.
Yeah.
To hear you describe it in that way is something that is, I think, for me and a lot of people who came to town to do more traditional stuff, struggle to make that connection with, which is, it's, and again, it's not just generational, because I know some folks of all varying ages who've like, oh, I get what digital is. And you can be young and not get it too. I've had some people who are like, I'm on Facebook. What else? I don't know. Okay. We're not having a conversation. exactly. the freedom, but not just because I think sometimes, and I think you'll agree, the quote YouTube star mentality gets a bad rap, but sometimes a much deserved bad rap. Mm-hmm. But what you're describing isn't that. You're describing, no, I don't want to become YouTube famous. I want to sit down and have a career the way I want it.
Exactly.
So that's powerful.
Yeah. I mean, and I've always wanted to do things that were multifaceted. I never wanted to be Like I was, you know, I did music for a little bit personally. Never was great singing or like playing guitar or anything. And I, you know, didn't have any sort of acting experience or anything.
I can see you in a Nashville honky tonk. I can see you.
Yeah. I mean, I dabbled for
with like an electric guitar playing some stuff. Yeah.
But I always wanted to do things that were multifaceted. I never wanted to do just one thing. Like I was like, I never want to sit in an office and like, you know, punch in numbers and do something. So when I saw, you know, I was an avid watcher of YouTube of these people, you know, writing books, having their own, you know, fashion or beauty lines and, you know, being able to go on tours and do speaking engagements and also make videos and produce stuff. I was like, that sounds amazing to be able to touch all of these different areas of the entertainment industry and not be just like put in this box of like, you're a singer, you're an actor, you're a producer. It's like the entirety of that is really interesting to me.
That is traditional media in a nutshell, right?
Yeah.
Like, she's a singer, she's going to star in a movie. What? Like that. Yeah. On YouTube, in digital media, you can do it all. And it is, and it's not a free ride. It's harder, work.
Way harder.
I can tell you now as an unemployed cat, I work and I'm more busy now.
Yeah.
Then I was going to an office 9 to 5, mm-hmm. producing content, and I was fortunate to be 9 to 5. You'd go to the office like 8:30, leave at 8 p.m. some days, and that's a short day.
Especially in the beginning. Was definitely rough.
But. Yeah, I will pause for a moment here. If you are a listener out there of the NASDAQ Files, and you are a subscriber of Screen Junkies Plus, Parker is one of the only reasons, along with Anne Brashear and a lot of people behind the scenes, that you got to enjoy Screen Junkies Plus at all. It wasn't me. It wasn't the other guys. It wasn't Dan and Joe and JT. JT pressed the right buttons, but Parker was the one. We'd go home. Bye, Parker. She'd be like, great, I'm loading all this stuff onto the server.
Yep.
Have fun, jerks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was in the trenches with that. Screen Junkies Plus was kind of my baby a little bit. It was, you know, it was very much like from the very beginning, it was because when I joined Screen Junkies, I was not hired to be onto Screen Junkies. I started out on other channels, So I started out on the other channels. And then when Screen Junkies Plus came up, they came to me and they were like, hey, YouTube's going to need a little bit of help. Can you help handle some of the YouTube content? So I was like, yeah, sure, I'll take it on. And then slowly it became those other three channels, Screen Junkies and Screen Junkies Plus.
Yeah, you
had it. And so I was drowning for a good while there. And we did not have any sort of the technical stuff in place that in order to do it efficiently.
Yeah.
And so over the course of the like 2 years that I was there, I kind of helped build that infrastructure, even though it failed a lot. But like it was
technically, the technical stuff. Yeah.
I was like, I didn't like code anything, but I was very much in the trenches and buying the software that we had to buy. I was the one that they were going to and saying, hey, which ones do we need to get? What's the most important to you? And, you know, there were times where I was there until 11 p.m. at night, like having to sit and watch a bar progress and then fail at 98% and then start over. But towards the end, it got better. But, we had the stream apocalypse for a little while that just like, It failed and failed and failed. And I didn't know at the time that they were like, maybe we'll make this a second priority. And I was so frustrated. And I was like, help me.
Well, and that talks to when you talk about, you know, digital media, YouTube, and, you know, the excitement of coming to and building your own career. But also it's still the Wild West. We're still building the towns that we're going to live in. And there is a bit of a, you know, interesting thing going on where a lot of places are either shutting down or laying off employees and all that kind of stuff. But that's, I think, part of the growing pains because it's all still going to be here.
Yeah.
It's just going to be in a different form. And what you help do, along with Aunt Gracie Hartman, the team, the behind-the-scenes people there, I can't stress enough. It would be so funny because we get tweets like, Dan, Spencer, Ken, other guy, why isn't this stuff working? And be like, we don't – the smart people are working on it. Yeah. We're the dummies who talk about Star Wars and Ant-Man.
It's crazy. But
kudos to you for that, number one.
I mean, everybody was really understanding, and I think most, you know, the guys there really understood that, like, it wasn't that, like, I pushed the wrong button and everything failed. It was just part of, you know, the process, and sometimes things broke, and sometimes things worked perfectly, and sometimes you have, you know, Screen Junkies in Comic-Con where we all wanted to die, but we made it through.
that first Screen Junkie Central was a pretty intense experiment. Ooh. We all fought a war together.
Oh, yeah. See. I only had about 3 mental breakdowns during that.
Yeah.
I think you probably saw me cry at least twice.
Oh, well, you know, it's YouTube. You're going to
We made
cry.
It. 18 shows, 3 days.
Yeah. I produced, along with James Anderson, 18 shows in 3 days. You and Halavik and Gracie and the team and David Backman. And
across like 4 different platforms. I was running all the streams, all at the same time.
Set up in a booth at a restaurant behind a big curtain.
The smallest booth in the world, too. Yes. It wasn't like a normal size booth.
With computers and laptops and stuff squished into this restaurant booth behind the curtain. So if you were a fan and you're like, I'm going to go to the bathroom, what's this curtain up? Behind that was 4 people just pulling hair out.
Yeah, and just like eating pounds of M&M's. Just pounds of M&M's that they left.
Oh, glory days.
Oh, man.
So when you come to Los Angeles from Nashville, from Tennessee, which I love, is a great state. Memphis is a different, it's West Tennessee. I always spent time in East Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah, a little different.
You come on out here, you make this decision, you bring your dog. I'm sure, sure some maybe family comes out and you help move, right?
Yeah.
All right. But they leave. I'm fat because I've talked about this stuff on their show before. Because at 22, I moved to LA, only 2.5 hours away from my hometown.
Yeah.
You're going a few states over. That first night, when you turn the lights off and you're staring up at the ceiling and you're like, I'm here, what is that moment like?
Oh, God. I don't even remember. I think I was so stressed about interviews that I was just like, okay, I got to get up in the morning and go. Because I'm pretty sure that the day after I moved in was a Defy interview. So I was like, I have to get my stuff together and go. So I don't think I really had a lot of time to process until I think I started working at a real job. And then I was like, oh, I live in LA. Luckily, I had some friends here because I did spend a semester here in college. Right. So I wasn't like totally alone. But at the same time, like, it was me and Ryder against the world. And it was like we were living in this, you know, Hollywood apartment, the two of us. And it was a lot. I mean, I still don't think I really process it. Like, sometimes I'm like, oh, yeah, I live here. Like, I'll be driving home and, like, past the cityscape. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I did that.
Yeah, well,
I moved.
Yes.
Then all the way across the country.
This is like a good moment, I guess, to pause and give yourself a high five with your dog, Ryder. Mm-hmm. What kind of breed is Ryder again?
He is a Lab Great Dane.
That's right. That's right, big dog.
Big boy.
Every once in a while, we'll get to come by the studio, right?
Yeah. He came to Game of Thrones, Watching Thrones.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Yes.
He'd come on anytime I had to work on a holiday. I was like, if I don't get my weekend off, I bring my dog.
Dog's coming in. Dog's coming in. But you're here in the city and this and that. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, again, you're working your ass off at Screen Junkies. Mm-hmm. But that, again, too, was something you're like, this is the starting point. I wanted to get to somewhere else. Back then and where now, where do you want to take the Parker Roberts brand, you know?
Yeah.
Because you've got a great YouTube channel that's going on. We're going to talk about it in a second. But
I mean, ideally, that would be full-time job, would be doing YouTube. I mean, I would absolutely love that. I've been a fan of YouTube for so long. And, you know, I have creators I've watched for like 10 years, like ridiculous. I would love to make that my full-time career, to be able to be creative every day and to make things would be amazing. And right now I'm kind of big on not making my like passions support me because I don't want to like resent the fact that I have to do what I love. So
in other words, me 4 months into my job at Screen Junkies.
Gotcha. No, but I'm always, you know, I want to have stability so that I do have the freedom to do what I want to do. And so, you know, if YouTube doesn't work out, ideally I'd be doing something creative, you know, producing, directing, or, you know, just, I mean, creative directing, being a part of making something what it is and not necessarily like just being in the background and not being a part of what's happening.
Well, I'm fascinated by this new era, this new industry, because look at the skills you now bring to the table.
Yeah.
Front of camera, behind camera, you're shooting your own stuff, you're editing your own stuff, right? And then you're hoping one day that you have to hire someone because you're doing so much stuff there. You're doing all that. But then also you've built a streaming service, on-demand streaming service, all this stuff. And the traditional folks, myself being part of them, like right now, if I need a thumbnail for something with the Knapsack files, I have to call like 4 people. Do you have an hour to I don't Photoshop at all, you know?
I don't know how to Photoshop at all.
But you could throw stuff together and you've got this entire, and that's why I don't like, and I try not to look negatively, because I have a career only because of digital media, but I don't want to be Clint Eastwood on my porch going, get off my lawn. And I see a lot of my friends and colleagues from my era and pursuit of traditional media have that view where it's like, Yeah, but you look at the skills Parker Roberts has.
Yeah.
Look at across the board. So when you say creative director, that's what making me think. When you creative director, yeah, you could go run a brand.
Yeah.
Because you've done all aspects.
Yeah. I mean, and I think a huge part of that comes from working at Screen Junkies, because the position that I was in touched every aspect of it. It wasn't like I was just production and I was just on set and then I went home. It was like I was in every marketing meeting. I was in every production meeting. Yeah. I was in every corporate meeting. I was in every single aspect of it. So I got to see, technical side of it. So I got to see a full, 360 round trip of what it's like to be in the digital space. And, with the job I do now, working with managers and agents and stuff like that, I get to see a lot of the background of what it is. And it makes me realize that, if this happens for me someday, hopefully it does, I have knowledge of what happens behind the scenes. So it's going to be a whole lot harder to take advantage of me because I've seen it all, because I know the ticks, tricks and the
falls. You're a mogul, right? you're a potential big time mogul, but so you start this YouTube channel, Stories in the Dust, right? Yep. Where does that come from? Where I like that name.
It comes from a poem by a guy named Adam Clay. I have a tattoo of it. So the tattoo came first. But
you have a tattoo. Did you ask for forgiveness from God for that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I have a Bible verse tattoo. And I had a manic attack about it. And then I realized that, it's really not that big a deal.
Yes.
But it's from a poem by Adam Clay where he, in the poem, says, he's looking at a TV screen and he says, "It's off, you tell me it's off, but there are at least 5,000 stories in the dust and the small talk of dirt." Beautiful. So saying, kind of somebody can tell you that something's, not right, or it's not oh, you're using that TV wrong because you're looking at it and it's not on, but he's saying, maybe it's not perfect and it's not working, but I can see the stories in it. And so that was kind of, at the time in my life when I, found that poem and got that tattoo, there was a lot of personal turmoil going on, within my family and stuff. And for me, it was about just keeping perspective of saying, this will be the things I tell stories about one day. And then when it came time to make my channel, I wanted it to be about storytelling and about, whether that was in the form of me talking about how much I love makeup or sharing, things that had happened in my life. So I wanted it to be, basically we're all a story worth telling. That's where that came from. And so it just fit and it stuck and
it worked.
The poet loves it and
he's aware of it.
Yeah.
This isn't an ancient poem.
No. This is actually a guy that I discovered in my college creative writing class.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, he was a friend of my professor and he wrote this incredible book called A Hotel Lobby at the End of the World. And it's an incredible poetry book. And I just fell in love with that particular poem. And messaged him one day to be like, "Hey, this might be kind of weird, but I got his contact information from my teacher."
Right.
And was like, "This might be kind of weird, but I got a tattoo of a line of your poem." And he's like, "You get free books for life." Every time he publishes a book, he sends me one. So it's really cool.
But
he loves it. And he's like, "I'm so glad that it resonated with you." So, yeah. Well,
I love this approach because what you do, because you're I got your channel up here too. It's mostly what people would describe as vlog style stuff, right? But by that, you're able to, your approach of telling stories, you're able to connect with your viewers.
Yeah.
Like you said, over the simple, if I was vlogging, I would have an entire playlist about mac and cheese, but also maybe something more serious. So you're able to connect with all these little moments here.
Yeah.
How do you find, and you're pretty honest with what you're saying, right? How do you find that's working?
I think it works well. I mean, some of the most popular stuff that I do on my channel is a series I do called Floor Sits, which is kind of podcast style, where I talk about different things that, my kind of philosophy with it is, stuff you would, sit around on your floor and talk to your friends about, having these, deep life chats about what's going on. And I've always, I've been through a lot. I mean, I'll be 25 in a couple of weeks, but I've lived a lot of life in 25 years and I have stories to tell and I have things that I can bring perspective to and being able to talk about things, honestly, I talk a lot about my father's addiction and my brother's addiction. And I have a whole video on that situation of just being how do you love an addict? How do you get through that process as the kid? The sister or, someone that doesn't struggle with it. And I know when I was 13 and I was, in that spot, how much I wish I would have had something like that, just to be like, here's this person who has made it out on the other side, who can identify with me. And I think just being vulnerable is, I always say, don't share what you haven't healed from. And it's like,
That's a lesson I could learn.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, you can talk about, you know, everybody has their life struggles, but if it's not something that you want people to comment on, don't talk about it. So if it's like, this would change the way I feel about it. Like, as much as I've been through with my brother and my dad's addiction and like the family counseling and the, you know, we're on the other side of that now. Like, I know how I feel about it and I know how my family is. And so no matter what people could say about it, it's not going to change how I feel about it. But like, if I'm not at that place with something else, then I don't share that.
That's tremendously wise. And all jokes aside, do they have are they aware of this? Are they watching? Mm-hmm. They're subscribed to the channel. I mean, is it helpful for them?
Yeah. Well, my brother is, I don't currently have a relationship with my dad, but, my brother is like very open about his sobriety as well. And he's, you know, he and I are super close. And I asked him before I ever talked about it, like, are you comfortable with me, you know, talking about my experience through it? And it was hard for him. Mm-hmm. I mean, he, you know, has to hear the ways that he, you know, not intentionally hurt me, but, you know, hurt the family and the things he went through. And it's just, you know, but he's supportive of me and saying like, this is as much your journey as it is mine. And I can't tell you, you know, how you felt. He's like, how you felt is what you felt. And he's like, I don't have any ownership over whether or not you share that truth. So
that's, I mean, yeah, I mean, I get kudos to you for not only talk about it, but hey, here's mm-hmm. I'd like to, and let's get through this. There. Have you had those kind of moments where the fans is such a weird word, supporters, watchers, you know, it's not like they're sending you postcards to be autographed. They're like people that you've connect with, have they reached out and said, hey, you've helped me? Have you felt that from
definitely.
What you're doing?
I've definitely had people who have sent me private messages, you know, and been like, I'm currently going through this and I don't have anyone to talk to about it. And just seeing that, like, somebody out there who's come out on the other side of it or is currently going through it is, you know, able to say like, it's all going to be okay. And it may not be easy and it may never feel okay, but eventually it will be. And, you know, I've had really incredible messages and really sweet messages that, you know, occasionally people will check in and be like, still loving your videos. And it still makes me happy when I see you upload. And it's been really great. I mean, people have been really responsive to it.
That's one of the, you know, on this feed, I've been honest with somebody that struggles with depression and self-loathing and stuff in the past and suicidal thoughts and all that stuff. And it's like, part of it's a purge.
Yeah.
Part of it's trying to own it. And I agree with you. I don't know if I've been consciously doing that, but it's like, I'm not in that spot as much anymore. The depression's on a different level. I've been through the tough stuff. I wasn't podcasting when I was knee deep in it.
Yeah.
And I'm glad maybe I wasn't. But I think that's part of the benefit of what goes on a lot now with new media. Because back in the day, you know, there's still stigmas around this kind of stuff. Yeah. But it was even harder. Where do you go talk about? We all grew up thinking adults had it all worked out. And here I am at 42 to tell you, no. I know less than I did 5 years ago.
Yep, not even close.
And so to have a spot, and for people to find their content creators that kind of create this community is really important. It's something I've been trying to do a little more, even with the Knapsack Files, over on my Discord server, which makes me seem so young and hip when I say that kind of stuff. So I'm glad that you're doing that because you then connect. You can also connect with if you doing a video on how. You know, you're wearing your makeup today brings in someone to the campfire.
Yeah.
And then the next video is you sitting down going, hey, here's a struggle I went through.
Yep.
They might not know that they had that.
Yeah.
So good job.
Yeah. It's fine. I mean, it's my personality. You know, like I am a deep person, but I also love to be goofy and love to love makeup very, very much. It's very creative. It's a fun outlet for me. So I want to talk about that and I want to talk about things that aren't so serious, but then I also do feel like I have a lot of perspective and it's just as if I was hanging out with my friends. Like I'm going to do their makeup for them and talk to them about stuff I love, but then also we're going to sit around and be like, so what's it like to be a woman in 2018? You know, we're going to have the hard talks too. And I feel like it's important to share, you know, a well-roundedness.
Yeah. You're also a good laugher too, because I used to, if you've watched some of the, my bigger movie fights moments, you're behind on the couch laughing. And it was one of the drunk movie fights. I think I heard you laugh a few times too. So people only thought I was good at it because, folks like you and Josephine and Ann were laughing back on the couch. So thanks for that there.
Funny.
You've also, let's talk Taylor Swift.
Yes.
All right. I like Taylor Swift. I'm a big fan of Ryan Adams, and he covered her album 1989 song by song.
Yep.
Great stuff there. So I get it. I get the heart of the stories here of what's going on. But you've also had this is some of your bigger videos have hit there.
Yeah.
Have you had any, has anyone from Taylor's camp reached out? I want, that's my goal.
That is my goal. I would love love that. No, I've never heard from anyone directly. Yeah. I mean, that is a lot of where my fan base on YouTube comes from. Sure. I mean, it was, you know, the first video I ever did was when she first premiered her song Shake It Off. She did this live stream, and at the time, I mean, I was making videos, but I was, you know, living with my roommate at the time, Chelsea, and she announced the live stream, and I was like, it'd be kind of funny to, like, film ourselves watching the live stream. And I didn't really think of it as being, like, a reaction video. I was just like, this would be funny. Like, it's new music for the first time in a few years. Like, I'm excited. I'm going to record myself. And I did that video, and at the time, I had horrible Wi-Fi in my apartment.
Tell me about it.
Oh my God.
Did you have Burbank Wi-Fi? Because it's the worst.
But I stayed up so late, like editing that video and then trying to get it to upload, and it just kept failing. I was like, this isn't even going to be relevant anymore. Like, I don't understand why I'm doing this. And then I finally got it to upload the next morning, and I was like, it was like 8 a.m. the next morning or something. And I was like, nobody's going to watch this video. It's too late now. And that was the first video for me that did well. So it ended up like, I mean, I was getting like tens of views at the time, and that one got like thousands. So I was just like, oh my God, this is crazy. So when the album came out, the full album, I did a full reaction video to that, like full on, like first time I'd ever heard any.
Every bit of the song? That's great.
There was a couple that were pre-released, but everything else was purely 100% my first reaction to it. And it's my favorite album of all time. Yeah. So to have that video of me like experiencing that album for the first time. And then from then on, it just kind of became like, you know, she might release a music video or something. Yeah. And then the one that hit big this time was when she released the new song, Look What You Made Me Do.
Yeah.
So it wasn't even the video. It was just the song.
That one
hit trending, which is crazy, and brought out the depths of the worst people on the internet.
That's the best.
Horrible people. But it trended for like 48 hours. Yeah. And it was insane. I was like, I went to bed with it at like maybe like 2,000 views, which I was like, this is crazy.
That's great.
And I woke up and it was at like 17,000, and I was like, holy shit. What are you talking about? But so that one hit it pretty big. I think it's like over 100K now.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. It's about 115, yeah.
Yeah, which is crazy. I mean, the rest of my videos get like 100 maybe. So like it's crazy, but I mean, I got a huge reaction, and it's great, but yeah, no, I wish that they'd reached out. I'm going to this show today, and I'm just like, come on, Taylor.
You just got to do a video that's a week, like this week in Taylor Swift. Right. I just did
a Q&A video all about Taylor Swift.
Perfect.
So it hasn't gone up yet, but I filmed that earlier today. So I'm like, maybe, because everybody's like, oh, what are you doing for tour? What are you doing? Are you going to show? Yeah. So I'm like, kind of hoping to, I'll be able to like meet people there.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, I'm going to the show too. So we'll see. But it's crazy. I mean, she's been my favorite since I was like 13. So.
Well, yeah. And because of her country music roots, right? I didn't, you know, and not that you and I haven't really ever talked music before. I mean, I'm looking at your shirt. That's not country music there, right?
No, it's not. I have no idea who this is.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay.
It's one of those.
No, we've talked music. No. We've talked music before over at the Trigger Drink. So you're all, you know, it's not like you're some cowboy boot wearing country girl from Nashville and Memphis here. No, you like music of all kind. But the connection there, she's got kind of that stuff there. It's a good heart to country music. So I tell people.
Yeah.
It's not about dogs and broken trucks. It's about other things.
Other stuff, too. It's a lot of storytelling, which I used to love country music a lot more than I do now.
Yeah.
But, I mean...
Well, like Taylor, she switched.
I was like, Taylor was what got me into country music and music in general. And I remember being 13, and she was opening for Rascal Flatts.
Yes.
And I went and saw Rascal Flatts with a friend. And I was like, who is this girl? I was like, she was like 16 at the time. And I was like, I want to be this girl's best friend. I'm like, who is she? And I immediately downloaded the album, and then from then on, it was just like smooth sailing. It was
that's
just it. Me and Taylor for next 10 years.
Love it.
Yeah, so she was the one that got me into music, and I still love her.
And getting some views onto your channel.
Yeah,
and you talk about
Taylor.
Yeah, talking about the drugs come out. How do you approach that side? That's the downside. It's not just YouTube comments. It's the direct contact that we all have with content creators, and people have it with you, people have it with me. I have it with other content creators that I'm a fan of, but don't know. You know, that's a thing. It can bring out some interesting stuff there. How do you negotiate those waters? As quite frankly, as a young woman in this industry, which is not easy.
No.
And so how do you, what walls do you put up? How do you deal with it?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I've been fortunate that I haven't had to deal with it much because my channel is still small and for the most part, you know, but when that video did hit trending, it was interesting because it was a lot of people that were just like, why is this video trending? And I was like, I didn't put it there.
Right. It's not my fault.
I was like, not my fault. I tagged this video well, apparently. But, I mean, it was just relevant to what was going on. And I had a small channel with, and it was getting big engagement. So I think that's likely what did it. But it was people that, like, because they were frustrated that I was on the trending page versus their favorite creator, it was like, let's just say every horrible thing we could possibly say about this person to them.
Right.
And at first it was kind of funny. And I was like reading through these and it would be like something totally irrelevant to the situation that was going on. And I was like, I don't care what this person has to say. But then about like the 30th time in a row you read that, like, yeah, you're a fat whore and you should die. Like, then you're like, okay, maybe this isn't so healthy for me to be reading. It kind of stopped being funny at that point. And you try not to take it to heart, but you kind of do.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, well, but luckily I have a lot of like good YouTube friends that I was able to like make moderators on my channel.
Oh, okay.
And had them kind of go in and clean out the garbage for me.
Yeah.
So that I didn't have to be the one to keep doing it. So that was great for them to like go in and do that for me. But in general, I usually don't get it. It's like, there'll be videos that I'm not even like physically in that say like, you're fat. And it's just like, it's just people being people. And I try not to take it personally, but
right.
I mean, occasionally you have, you know, there's a lot of mansplaining that goes on.
Sure.
Like a lot of especially on Twitter when you like say something
let me tell you here.
Wrong about this situation. But I mean, especially being a Taylor fan, it's kind of popular to hate Taylor.
For shame, I say.
She's a wonderful lady. She does a lot of great things. And because she's not as politically active as people want her to be, they think that, you know, it's not good to be her fan. And like, how could you like this person? And like, she covered Earth, Wind, and Fire, and everybody like exploded. Mm-hmm. And I was like, it's just a song. I was like,
I agree.
I was like, it was decently good. So yeah. I was like, I don't understand why everybody is freaked out. But.
It's every generation loves to throw up a pop star, as Paul Simon says, and then they love to tear him down. It's just, you know, see poor Britney as well.
My queen. Yeah. My other queen.
Yeah. So, and you're so right about, you know, I always say now, like, I legitimately on Collider Jedi Council have not looked at the comments in two calendar years.
Since
I started appearing on the show, either as a guest or a regular, now a guest again. And it's just because, after a while, the first couple, you're like, sure, I'm bold, I get it. And the 10th one, you're like, yes, I actually am emotionally upset with this when I'm not listening to the comments. I say to this to myself enough.
Yes.
That I don't need you.
Yeah.
And that's where you turn it off.
Yeah. And I mean, it's totally, and especially being a woman and body image and, you know, like I'm not a supermodel. Like I'm 5'2" and fine. Like,
and you're gorgeous young lady. Don't you think a second you're not.
It's like, and of course it's like, I see everything that they're saying.
Right.
So as soon as somebody like points out, like it doesn't matter if I'm 90 pounds or 900 pounds. Like I have a natural double chin and it's like something that's just like, it's been there my whole life since I was a baby. But then when like other people keep pointing it out and you're like, I can't do anything.
Unless I eat nothing but carrots for two years. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
As a 7-year-old kid who was like scrawny 30 pounds, I had a gut. It used to be a party joke. My mom used to be like, do your gut trick for the kids. and now as I'm older, it's like, look at the fatty. And it's like, no, I just think it doesn't matter. Yeah. I've always got this, I got this shape.
I'm 5'2".
Thank you, like, internet.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm a tiny person otherwise, but I'm just like, just let me live. Yeah. Just let me live. I enjoy chocolate.
Yeah.
So what?
As you should.
Yeah.
As you should. No, I mean, yeah, it's tough. And it's the downside. So we're talking about all the positives. It's part of the downside. And that's just, you know, you put your thick skin on as much as you can, but you're only human. And especially at, you know, you're not that money does not buy happiness and money is a down payment, but it doesn't guarantee it. So until you're behind those walls of your mansion, you're just a person out there struggling.
Yeah.
And to hear some of that stuff, it can keep you up at night if you're not careful.
I think even if you are behind the walls in your mansion,
you're
like, as a human, just it's discerning sometimes. And sometimes when you make something you really, really love and then it doesn't get any attention and you're like, well, dang it, like I put so much work into this thing, like my Taylor videos are always going to get way more views than anything else I do.
Sure.
But like, my channel is not a Taylor Swift channel. It's a lifestyle channel that happens to also talk about Taylor Swift. So sometimes it's like, I put a ton of work into a video that gets like maybe 100 views or so, but then it's like, I do like a half-ass video about Taylor and it gets like 3,000.
Sure.
And I'm like, come on, people. Like, I want to do both.
I'm doing serious. Right?
Yeah.
But you are, and that's the thing.
Yeah.
And build up the consistency to it there. How how do you approach that? It's like, you know, we all kind of get this, hey, Ken, I want to start a podcast. What's the advice? And I have some basic ones that I give out. But for you, who's rolled up your sleeves and you're in the thick of it and have seen all sides of this. Now you're dealing more on the management side for some stuff, your current job and everything. How do you approach building this channel? Actual, like, boom, paper, thoughts. How do I do it?
It's hard. It's hard, especially working full time. It's taking time. And people see it as like, oh, you're posting a video a week. Like, it couldn't possibly be that hard. Mm. It can be, especially when you don't have the time to dedicate to it. But I found that bulk filming helps a lot. Film a couple videos in a day and then have a month's worth of stuff to go. But as far as just like general, like if you want to start a channel, I think the thing for me is just start it. Like that, I think that's the hardest part is just like, even if you film something that you don't ever post, like just try it and see what you think and make what you like to watch and make what you want to watch. Mm-hmm. And if it sucks, like, it's all right, move on to the next one. You just got to do it. Like, and I think that was, cause I wanted to start a channel for years before I ever did it. Yeah. And then a friend of mine had a channel, asked me to be in a video and she was like, well, now you're in my video, so you have to start one. And I was like, oh crap, okay, I guess I'm gonna do this. And then once I did it, I never looked back. Like, I've never thought about stopping, I've never thought about giving it up. But it's just a matter of just starting and making what content you want to watch and supporting people that you like and just, you know, putting in the work.
That's
what you have to do. Is like, there's a lot of people I see, you know, I think we all see, like, that are really, really popular online that like don't do anything.
Right.
Like, they post a video every 3 months and like, they complain that they don't have enough money to pay rent, but they have hundreds of thousands, if not millions of subscribers.
Right.
And you're like, you have this incredible opportunity and all these people to help you build your career and you're not taking advantage of it. Whereas like, it's like harder when you're smaller because you're having to put like 600 times more effort into it to even get a quarter of what other people have. So just, and it's, you know, hard sometimes, not necessarily in a, I wish I had a million views.
Yeah, it's like, not that. Yeah.
It's like, I would love for it to be my career. And I see people that have it as a career that don't take advantage of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's so much you could be doing if you just tried, if you just knew how to brand yourself and how to expand and how to, like, diversify a little bit instead of just being like, I'm going to eat these hot chips for a channel video and then I'm going to sit around on my butt all day can't make rent.
Man, you're speaking, you're spitting out knowledge. So I might hire you as my new manager. I mean, seriously, gosh, as I try to build my post, employment life here, my post, where are you sitting now? Looking back as you are now, a couple years now in LA, and you've struggled some things. I know some, you know, a big, fantastic injury you suffered when I was at Screen Junkies that one day I'm on Facebook or Twitter or something. There's a picture of you in a air vac helicopter.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You've overcome a lot. You really have. But you looking at where you stand now, like, how are you doing? How you feeling? You taking this breath to go, I've done it. I've been it.
Yeah.
I've been here. I've stayed here. I'm going to stay forever.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, what Ken is referring to is me falling off a cliff like a little over a year ago. I fell off about 15-foot cliff in Laguna Beach and fell and just, like, destroyed the left half of my body. Just, like, I broke hand in two places, screwed up my elbow so bad, and then just was bruised and cut head to toe.
It was wasn't it some nice comforting coral reef type of stuff?
Yeah, it was just it was real fun. And then had to be helicoptered out because the tide was so bad we couldn't get back. Which is how it happened. It just, like, storm blew in. I got hit by a wave, and next thing I knew, I was, like, crumpled into a ball.
I'm only laughing because I know you survived it.
I did.
But I cannot tell you how weird it was. A chain of text messages from your coworkers going, did we all see
it? Did anybody see this?
Yeah. What's going on?
Here's the thing, Ken. I'm really bad at, like, acknowledging how hurt I am. Like, really bad at it. Like, my family gets mad at me because I'll be, like, very injured, and I'm just like, I'm fine, everything's cool. But, like, I really wasn't at all.
Yeah.
And I tried really hard to be. And I think I was back at work, like, 3 days later.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, I shouldn't have been. I don't even know that it was that long.
No, I think it was, I think it was, like, the same week because we were still like, what happened on Monday?
It was nuts because it was 4th of July weekend. And I was just like, I think because I wasn't life-threateningly injured that I was like, I'm fine. But the reality was, is I wasn't at all. And so I had so much growth that happened from that point in time. And it was just like, I went from, I kind of say it's like the universe kicked me off a cliff to make me pay attention to myself, because I was like,
thanks universe.
I was like, it literally took me falling off a cliff to like learn that I needed to take care of myself and that I was working really, really hard. I had friendships that weren't great, that were really toxic. And I just like for years and years and years of my life had not taken care of myself the way that I should have. And then this kind of forced me into a spot where I couldn't be as independent as I used to be. So it was like, you know, I couldn't do things with my left arm because it was so battered and bruised and torn up. And I was in a cast for like 6 weeks. And then, you know, for 6 months, I was in intense pain in my elbow because they tried physical therapy. They tried cortisone injections, like all the stuff to try to fix my elbow before I had to have surgery.
Yeah.
And then it was just like being in constant pain for 6 months, like will change you as a person. And like, I was like, I feel so bad now for people who have chronic pain and chronic illness, because it was miserable. Like we went to Comic-Con 2 weeks after I fell, and I was in like this like full on robotic arm looking thing.
That's right,
yeah. It was miserable. Everything was terrible. And then eventually once I had the surgery, which was the best thing that I ever did in my whole life, it was an intense surgery and it was 6 weeks off of work and then 12 weeks of physical therapy. But like having that experience, learning to be like, oh, I need to like ask for what I need. And that translated into all parts of my life. It was
wow.
Asking for what I needed at work when I was like, hey guys, from now on, like past 6:30, everything else will be done the next morning. Like, I'm like, I'm not working. Yeah, I'm like, that. I'm not working past 6:30 anymore. Like I'll work. I'll pick it up in the morning when we get to work. Or, you know, in the midst of me falling off that cliff and having that experience, I was there with my then best friend who then ghosted after that. Like she dropped me off after the hospital and then never spoke to me again. So I was in the midst of like, you know, dealing with being independent, but then also losing my like closest friendship here in LA, and then having to just be like, well, I got to make it work.
It's me
like,
and my dog.
It's me and my dog, Mr. Ryder, the best thing that ever happened to me. And, you know, like I didn't have another option. It was like, I have to figure out how to adapt or else I'm not. And I was like, I'm not willing to give this up. Like, I'm not willing to give up LA and everything I've worked for.
I guess you could have packed up and gone home.
No, my mom wanted me to so bad. She was like, you were like, especially when I had the surgery, I was insistent upon doing it in LA because I was like, well, I have a life here. My dog is here. All the stuff. My mom's like, we'll fly the dog home. You'll come home. We'll take care of you. Like, we'll take off work. But I was like, I have to stay here. I'm like, this is everything I've worked for. And I don't want to lose my apartment. I don't want to lose everything I have here. And so it was a matter of like either thrive and get through it or that's it. And I wasn't willing to give it up. So I just was like, I don't care if I've got gigantic scars on my arms now.
Oh, you've got a badass scar. Two. Oh yeah. See the one on the outside? The inside. Yeah. You look like you were in Game of Thrones and you just killed the mountain.
Yeah. It looks like a shark. It looks like something just took a chomp out of my arm.
I love it.
For those who can't see, I've got like a 3-inch one on one side and a 6-inch.
You look like you pitched 6 years in the majors and they said you can need Tommy John surgery and it's great. And you probably look, I mean, do you look at that now and with what you're saying, and I'm sure you didn't come to this decision overnight. Oh, that was a good thing that happened. Do you look down at those scars and go, this is a reminder of the path?
Yeah, absolutely. Because it was genuinely the first time in my life I ever put myself first. And it was, you know, like kind of growing up in a chaotic household and kind of being a caretaker to everyone else, to then have the situation that forced me to make myself a first priority changed the entire course of my life. It became like, I mean, it's why I started going to therapy, because they were like, this is going to be a really intense surgery. They're like, you're going to have very little independence and mobility, because it was moving muscles and releasing nerves. And I'm like, I've got, you know, I had like 50 stitches or something like that. Yeah. Like I had a ton. It was really, and they're like, you're not going to be able to function for probably about 12 weeks, like at a full capacity. So I was like forced to be like, okay, I have to sit with myself. And they were like, you're going to need probably talk to somebody because you're going to be, you know, in a hard spot because you're going to be in pain, and, you know, antidepressants are probably going to be helpful with painkillers. And just like, it was just, it forced me to reevaluate my entire life.
Right.
And it's been like, as much as it was horrible, it's like also one of the best things that's ever happened to me.
Yes. I mean, and you know, like a lot of other people, I know you might have anxiety issues, mm-hmm. might other things. You're on your own here in LA, yeah. you know, like
anxiety and me are tight.
So that's tough enough. And I've seen anxiety mm-hmm. cripple people that I know. So you're not just being cliche when you're like, I've lived a few years already
yeah.
just in the time I've known you,
yeah.
you know, to watch you go to your show up at that, RoboCop arm sling, yeah. you have been, and then yeah. you to see, hear your perspective, but also to know that you're sharing this stuff.
Yeah.
It's valuable. It's important.
Yeah. And I'm so not a person that's really ashamed of my struggles. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, there are certain things I'll always keep private that, like, you know, I want to deal with on my own so I can heal. But, like, I'm not...
Stay tuned to Patreon while I get Parker to list those.
List those. Yep. It's like, that's going to be a, like, what, $15 a month? Yeah. but I just am not really ashamed to share that I've been through things, because I feel like I always say, if I write a book one day, which I plan to, I want to call it like Everyone's Fucked Up and That's Okay. Because like we all have stuff that we've been through, and we've all had like, you know, stuff happen to us in life, and we can all pretend that we're all fine and dandy, and we can like make jokes about being depressed and anxious. But like to talk about being like, yeah, I've been on antidepressants for like 6 years. Like, it's mm-hmm. great. It changed my entire life. Like, there was a point when I didn't think that it was, you know, like, I didn't know. I thought it was crazy. Like, I thought it was insane.
And to go take the pills. Right? Yeah.
I was like, well, I didn't even really know what anxiety was until I started mm-hmm. watching YouTube, actually. But I had felt that for years and years and years, and then realized, oh, that's what's happening to me. And so mm-hmm. then when I, you know, kind of hit my bottom on anxiety and started taking medication, when I was like, I don't want to do this, but I was like, I can't help it anymore. And my whole, like, life changed from that point forward. And I'm like, but there could be somebody out there that's doing the same thing. That's like, I'm having anxious thoughts and I can't function and I am scared to ask for help. But being like, I did not want to take pills. I did mm-hmm. not want to do it. And I like just got to a point where it was so bad. And now I'm like, God, I don't know like who mm-hmm. I would be without it, because it's like, it was so hindering to everything that I wanted, that it, you know, to not have, you don't realize how anxious you are until you're not anxious anymore. And then you're like, wow, this is what it's like to be normal.
Would your, if you don't mind me asking, like your triggers are, is it anxious in public? Is it anxious mm-hmm. in your head? Is it anxious? What, all of the little column A, little column B,
a little bit of everything. It's sometimes situational, depending on what's going on, but especially if my sleep schedule's off.
Okay.
I would get anxious so bad if my sleep schedule's off. But I think a lot of it is introspection, just like mm-hmm. a constantly being inside my own head. And, you know, sometimes it's just like you'll literally be sitting there and all of a sudden your body's like, you're going to die. And you're like, but I'm fine.
But
it's Thursday and I'm sitting on my couch with my dog. Like, there's nothing wrong. And it's like, no, you're going to die. That's what's happening right now. Something's coming to get you. And you're just like, body, you need to chill. Like, meditation's mm-hmm. helped a lot. You
know, oh, okay.
Just to have those moments of like, okay, let me like quiet this for a second to see if I actually am having anxiety about something or if my body's just reacting. But I get a lot of like, if I've done something wrong, what I picture is wrong, like somebody's going to be mad at me. Oh God, I'm an anxious mess.
Yeah, that's, I suffer maybe some little social anxiety that's gotten better over the years. Mine's more on a different side of just straight depression and self-loathing and all that kind of and confidence issues. But when I hear the anxiety, that's what, when it's against the standards for yourself that you think other people have for you might be a way to describe it. I'm being clumsy. I'm not a doctor, but that seems like a little bit too.
I mean, especially like, kind of growing up the way I did, it was always chaos, and so it was always like you know, I was constantly like a pillar, I guess, in the family of like having my shit together. So if I don't have my shit together, to me it means like everything's gonna fall apart. So when I have those moments of feeling like, which I don't have my shit together at all, but like when I have the illusion that I have my shit together, I'm better. But then if I like do something like a mess up at work, or I like make a friend mad, or I hurt somebody's feelings, I am just like a mess. I'm just like, I don't know what I've done. Like, somebody please help me. I'm like, I didn't mean to. I don't mean to hurt anybody. I hate hurting people's feelings so much.
Yeah.
But I'm also a pretty straight shooter. So I'm like, if you're pissing me off, I'm going to tell you.
Yeah. but there's a difference. I know what you mean too. Like I'm not so much a straight shooter, not in the sense that I hold stuff, but I just like, I'll take the hit. But that's my problem. Yeah. Like I'll be like, whatever, I'll feel bad about it, and you go on. I'll feel bad about it. But yeah, you know, I do that until I explode. explosions can be bad. But yeah, even just I know working with you, you're not afraid to say, hey, this is bothering me. But it's like, at the same time, you're such a you are a sweetheart, and so I know what you mean. Where you're like, I hurt somebody's feelings.
Because I can be really stern and like, especially in a, in a business setting, and I can be like, this is what I want and this is what I need, and you're not doing this the way that it needs to be done.
Right.
But then I also feel bad about it later.
Right.
Like I can in the moment, and then I'm like, oh, was I too mean? Was I too mean? I'm sorry. Mean too. I can't tell you how many times I've been like forceful with someone in work.
Yeah.
And then like 2 days later, like texting them and be like, I'm sorry if I was like really too aggressive there. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But it's like, I can't just like let it go. I've gotten better at that, especially like the asking for what I need. It's like, it's like sometimes like you can't get what you don't ask for. And it's like, if you need to not work past 6 p.m., just be like, I'll deal with it in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, this is great. But like,
yeah. Cause again, you weren't just like, 6:05 You were 11 p.m.
Yeah.
So I'm glad you stood up for yourself, and it's amazing what it took.
Yeah.
The wind gusting you off a cliff. Yeah. You know, I mean, life, death experience, near death experience in a way. You said
you're free helicopter,
and you're thinking like, in the moment, you're like, hey, I know I'm fine. But you know, or post the moment, but you know, falling off cliffs ain't the best thing to be doing.
No, and I definitely have not been back to the beach.
Understandably.
I look at cliffs near water and I'm like, oh god, I'm gonna die.
I might want to avoid, there's this the canyon thing they have in Arizona. You might want to stick away from
I'm good with cliffs. I'm good. You know, once is enough. You don't really need it again. Like when you got to pick like rock out of the side of your body, like done, you know?
No.
I was like, it's not worth it.
Not the best.
Not the best time.
But you get through that. You have the perspective, and you are absolutely doing it. I couldn't be more proud of what you've already done. I can't be more proud just from a former coworker and colleague and friend. Again, not former friend. Former colleague and coworker. To see what you're doing. And I love when Stories and Dust first popped up, it was like, my head was like, oh, what's Parker doing? Oh, I get what she's doing. You know, I get what you're doing. So if you're not going to allow yourself, and I think you will, but if you're not going to allow yourself to take the win, big win for what you've accomplished since moving to LA. And I hope you allow yourself to sit back and maybe pet your dog, Ryder, and say, I'm doing it. I'm still going to do it.
I did the damn thing.
And I've done it.
Did the damn thing.
You have a great story. So Parker, thank you for coming on to the AppSec Files and really being open and honest and dropping some pearls of wisdom. I really appreciate that. Tell everybody where they can find all your wonderful material.
I am on all social media at Parker Roberts. Make sure you have both R's in there. Some people don't. But
like also Park Roberts?
Park Roberts. Yeah, it's usually I've got my email. The poor guy that has Parker Roberts at Gmail. I feel so bad for him because everybody gets my email wrong. But and then youtube.com/storiesinthedust. And come hang out with me. I'm always on Instagram stories and on Twitter. So.
Absolutely. And if you are an AppSec Files listener and you pop on over and subscribe to her YouTube channel, just let her know I sent you. Let her know that her sharing her story connects and brings in more people so she continues to do it. Parker, thank you again so much for coming on. And for you guys and AppSec Files listeners, thanks so much for listening and supporting. You can check out my Patreon page at patreon.com/AppSec Files. This podcast is available on iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn. All the places we will go. And I am working on some t-shirts. Stick by TeePublic. We're trying to do it. I'm getting there.
Give me the merch.
I can give you a sticker.
Amazing.
That's what I got right now. The stickers have come in first. But more things coming. Thank you guys for listening. Follow me at KatNapsuck. Get into Twitch with me, guys, and hang out while I play some baseball and some Star Wars. That's what we do. Getting the brand out there so Parker can be proud of me.
Always proud of you.
That's it. Thank you. Seriously, I'm glad this happened. And it took a while on my end. A couple emails on my end where I'm like, I'm going to bring you in. You can't do it for a while.
Yeah, it's fine.
That's how life goes.
I don't have a social life.
So am I. Because I don't have no job. That's it, guys. We'll see you next week here on the Knapsack Files.